This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Futuro.
It was a sweltering summer evening in Washington, D.C., May of 2007, and Germania, a domestic worker, was getting dinner ready for her employer, Veronica, an Ecuadorian diplomat. And then there was a knock at the door.
Y golpearon la puerta. Obviamente yo ya sabía, yo había sacado mi ropa lo más que pude en bolsa de basura. Ellos no sospechaban nada porque me veían normal, pero yo estaba muerta en los nervios.
Germania knew who was on the other side, but she tried to keep a poker face. Earlier in the day, she had stuffed the few items which she had arrived with in the U.S. into black trash bags and placed them near a dumpster outside the house.
Ellos me sacaron rápido. Entonces, llegó el esposo y se armó todo el lío. Pero a mí ya me tenían en la banco.
When the man who'd been knocking walked in the house, he told Germania to leave now, grab her bags, and get in the white van he'd parked outside. Sitting in the van, Germania says she was nervous. She was happy, but mostly scared. She had no money, she didn't speak English, and she didn't really even know where she was going. But she was free. From Futuro Media and PRX, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, the dark side of little-known visas for diplomatic domestic workers. Washington, D.C. is one of the world capitals of diplomacy. While less than a million people live in the city, it's home to diplomatic missions from more than 175 countries, meaning that there are thousands of ambassadors, consuls, diplomats, and other international organization officials who live there. But there's a hidden world inside their homes. It's the world of their staff, drivers, translators, and domestic workers, most of whom are women, who were brought to the United States via a special temporary visa created just for the staff of diplomatic representatives. But once in the U.S., these workers are isolated and live in an international gray area, making them extremely susceptible to abuse and exploitation by their employers. This is what Noy Thrupkow learned after years of interviewing immigrant diplomatic domestic workers in Washington, D.C. She's an independent journalist who specializes in human and labor trafficking. Noy details their stories in an upcoming investigative piece for the Washington Post magazine. In collaboration with Latino USA, today we bring you the story of one of those women, Germania, an Ecuadorian domestic worker who we heard from at the top of the show. Latino USA producer Julieta Martinelli has worked with Noy in reporting Germania's story. They, together, pick up the story from here.
Noy, welcome to Latino USA.
Thank you so much, Julieta. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, Noy, you've spent a lot of time covering cases of human trafficking and labor exploitation all over the world. But for your latest work, you were much closer to home. Can you tell us about these special visas for diplomatic workers in the U.S. and why you say that they make domestic workers particularly vulnerable?
The special visa program is actually administered by our own State Department here in this country, and it allows diplomats and employees of international organizations like the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund to bring in domestic workers to work for them here in this country. So there are two kinds. One is the A3 visa, And that is for diplomats in missions and consular officials to bring in domestic workers. The other is G5, and that is for international organization staff to bring in domestic workers. I think the argument was in the past, we're coming from another country and we want to have someone who's working with us, who speaks our language, who makes our food, who can talk to our children in our native language as we are here in a foreign country. So it was kind of designed around the cultural comfort of the employers. It is a kind of complicated system because these workers are coming oftentimes from impoverished countries and they're working for people with a great deal more status than them. So there's a power differential already in terms of their economic status. In terms of the legal structure of this visa, it basically ties their ability to be in this country and to work legally to one singular employer.
You did dozens of interviews with former domestic workers, all of them women who worked in the homes of foreign diplomats here in the U.S. What did you learn from them?
I saw a wide range of experiences. You know, of course, there are many domestic workers who work for scrupulous and kind and law-abiding employers who are diplomats. That absolutely happens. And this work relationship can be transformative on the personal and economic level in any other way. But the problem is the power imbalance enshrined in both their individual economic statuses and also within the visa program itself can lead to a lot of problems. So we can see everything from overwork, many, many hours past 40 hours a week, underpayment and wage theft, in which they're promised one wage and given another. Non-payment. I've seen workers who have worked for literally years and gotten paid nothing. But there are also really a lot more troubling problems than that. There's been physical abuse, threats. People's passports have been confiscated. They've been forbidden to leave the home or talk to people outside of the family. And these two pieces, you know, the confiscation of people's documents and then confining and restricting their movements are integral pieces of what can amount to human trafficking, which is the use of force, fraud, or coercion to compel another person's labor. I think there has been a fixation on trafficking for the purposes of forced prostitution in this country for many different reasons. But I have found that labor trafficking is actually perhaps more prevalent than trafficking for the purposes of forced prostitution. But we don't understand it in that way. We don't understand its systemic nature. We don't want to talk about its groundings in our history. And we certainly don't want to look at the ways that we are implicated in this.
Can you tell me how prevalent abuse and exploitation is among diplomatic domestic workers? I mean, is this a rare occurrence or is this a systemic issue?
So it's difficult to say exactly how much of this is happening. We do know that it is happening, and we also understand that there are systemic problems that are causing this problem and systemic fixes that are not being implemented to make sure that perpetrators and alleged traffickers are actually being punished as a form of deterrence. And I actually built a database of both legal filings by domestic workers pressing cases against their diplomat employers and allegations that I culled from different social service organizations as well. And that was well over 100 for about since 2000 or so to 2021. We have an office inside of the State Department that is supposed to be the watchdog on this issue. And yet, at the same time, the State Department runs and administers a program that has led to human trafficking. So that kind of tension is not one that has been resolved. The potential for diplomatic incidences and the souring of relationships between countries and over what? The word of a domestic worker. So what is more important, statecraft or domestic work? We've made it very, very clear what side we're on.
And there's another legal structure at play here, right, that actually further exacerbates this problem, and that's diplomatic immunity. Can you tell me a little bit about what this means?
There are two levels of immunity. One is limited immunity, which means that you have immunity for what you do during the course of your job. So like a 9-to-5 kind of immunity. And the other kind is full immunity, and that's for people like ambassadors or high-up mission officials. And that means that you're exempt from criminal investigation and prosecution across the board 24 hours a day. So when you combine those factors, plus our own complicated history of discriminatory labor protections for domestic workers, the fact that these workers are working inside of the home, the fact that their legal status and work status is tied to one employer, and that employer might have diplomatic immunity, it can lead to potentially a lot of problems.
And that's exactly what happened to Germania. Germania's story starts in her native Ecuador. At 32 years old, she was living in Quito, the capital, and working at a daycare. Germania had been working since she moved to the city at just 13 years old from a small village near the coast. As a kid, she and her siblings had worked on her family's farm.
Empecé a trabajar cuidando niños, o trabajadora doméstica. Bueno. Yo en el colegio estudié sociales. Y cuando terminé tenía más campo abierto para la universidad porque podía escoger o periodismo o derecho.
In Quito, Germania put herself through school while working full-time and saving to help her family back on the farm. She dreamed of becoming a doctor, maybe a lawyer, or even a teacher. But her biggest goal was to help her family. And eventually, she had to give up on pursuing a degree.
Era extrovertida, tenía muchos amigos. Pues trabajaba y salía con mis amigos, regresaba a mi casa los fines de semana.
Still, she mostly enjoyed life in Quito. While she worked long hours at the daycare, she loved to dance and had a big group of friends that she saw all the time. One day, the owner of the daycare where she worked told her about an opportunity. Her sister, Veronica Peña, was a diplomat. And she was looking for a domestic worker to take with her to the U.S. to take care of her two kids and her home. Veronica had just been named second secretary to the Ecuadorian mission to the Organization of American States, a diplomatic job representing Ecuador in Washington, D.C. Veronica hired Germania for a trial period in Ecuador. It was hard work. It entailed cooking, cleaning, and taking care of the kids. Germania says she worked about 11 hours a day. She lived in the back of the home and had her own bedroom and bathroom. She made about $100 a month. The job wasn't easy, but Germania says she knew if she could make it to the U.S., she would make more money and be able to help her family in a more meaningful way. Once the trial period ended, she got the offer to go to D.C.
El contrato y era muy simple. Yo lo leí así como rapidito y lo firmé y se lo entregué.
Germania remembers that as they were about to enter a room in the embassy, Veronica pulled out a contract and asked her to sign. Germania only had a moment to skim it.
Lo que me recuerdo era que... Ay, sí, no me recuerdo. Creo que decía que me iban a proveer casa, comida, y que iba a ganar el sueldo a lo que estaba estipulado en Washington, D.C.
But she remembers it said that she would be paid the minimum wage in D.C., about $6 an hour. She would work full-time, and her housing and medical care would be taken care of. It sounded great. Germania signed. Then she was approved for a G5 visa and told that she would need to return home every 2 years to renew it. The next day, she got a passport. All set to travel, Germania went back home to see her family one last time. It was a tearful goodbye.
Yo les dije, yo voy a volver, solo son en 5 años yo regreso. Iba a comprar la casita, vamos a poner un negocio y obviamente no vamos a ser ricos, pero va a cambiar un poquito para mejor nuestras vidas. Los abracé, los besé y me vine.
But Germania was excited. Her plan was to stay in the U.S. for the 5 years that Veronica was in her post. In that time, she would save enough money to open her own business when she returned. In the meantime, she would send her parents money to build a home.
O sea, yo cuando vine a este país, yo vine con un baúl lleno de sueños. Y era comprarme mi casa y poner un negocio. Ese era mi máximo sueño.
Germania says she left Ecuador with a suitcase full of dreams.
Coming up on Latino USA, Germania arrives in D.C. to begin her job at Veronica's house, but Soon she realizes her life in the U.S. won't be what they had agreed to. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between, and they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino.
Hey, we're back. Before the break, we heard from Germania. She's an Ecuadorian woman who was about to start a new life in the U.S. as a domestic worker for a diplomat. Producer Julieta Martinelli picks up the story from here.
When Germania arrived in Washington, D.C. in July of 2002, it was culture shock. The U.S. was not how she imagined at all.
Esto es Estados Unidos, porque tú piensas que acá no hay pobreza, que acá no hay nada, ¿no? Entonces, como que, wow.
Germania says she was shocked to recognize poverty as they drove through certain neighborhoods. What she saw in the movies was so different. Within a few days in D.C., with Veronica's family, Germania started worrying. She thought the job would be like her experience in Quito, but now there was an endless amount of work to be done. She was up at sunrise and still working well into the evening. And things with Veronica were icy.
Dejaba las instrucciones, ella se iba a su oficina, se iban los niños, yo me quedaba limpiando, haciendo la comida, regresaba al almuerzo, mediodía, comían, hacía su siesta y se volvía a ir a trabajar.
One of the first things Veronica did was take Germania's passport. Germania knew that the passport was all she had to prove her identity, but Veronica told her she had no choice.
Yo le dije, si me llega para migración, ¿yo qué hago? Que me llamen a mí. Eso es lo que me decía. Le dice que me llamen y me llama. Y yo voy a mostrar que tú estás legal en este país.
Germania worried about leaving the house. She thought about what would happen if she got stopped by immigration. Veronica said she didn't need to worry. She would just call her and she would confirm her legal status with the police. But this anxiety made Germania reluctant to go out at all. In Ecuador, Germania had the comfort of her own country. She spoke the language, she had family and friends around. But here, she didn't speak English or really even know where she lived. She literally knew no one outside of her employers. But Germania kept telling herself that things would get better. This was a sacrifice for her future and for her family. Because Germania was always at home, she was at her employer's beck and call 24/7. At night, when she finally lay to rest, if the family wanted something, they just walked into her bedroom unannounced. Germania really had no privacy since she slept in the laundry room in the basement and there were no locks on her door. Her bed was an old cot, a hand-me-down with cigarette burns. Most nights, she was so exhausted that she still managed to fall asleep, despite the discomfort of the thin, hard surface on her weary back. The loneliness and the endless swooshing, thumping, and banging of the old washing machine next to her cot. Eventually, Germania says she couldn't take it anymore. She needed space. She wanted to do other things. Germania says she saw a sign for free English classes taught at a nearby school in the evenings. She begged her employers for months to let her sign up. Eventually, they agreed. So two nights a week, if all her duties were handled beforehand, Germania was allowed to leave while the family ate dinner.
Y yo entraba a las 7, tenía que dejarles puesto en la mesa de la cena, todo listo. Me iba a la escuela, regresaba a las 9:30. y a limpiar la cocina y todo lo que habían comido.
Germania felt grateful for this small kindness and hoped that it was an indication of Veronica's loosening grip. But then, one day Germania began having serious pains in her abdomen, and Veronica told her that she wouldn't pay for a doctor.
Una vez estaba con dolor de mi barriga, y le dije a ella y me dijo, oh, mira, si es problema del apéndice, vas a tener que esperar hasta que regrese.
Germania says Veronica told her if she needed to get her appendix taken out, she would just have to wait until she went back to Quito, or she could pay for it herself.
O sea, si es problema del apéndice, te moriste porque no vamos a hacer nada. En palabras simples.
Germania couldn't afford a doctor's bill. While she worked 12 to 15 hours a day, 6 days a week, she was only making $300 a month. It was barely enough to get by, let alone take care of her family back home too. So she borrowed money from Veronica's husband, and it took her nearly a year to pay it back. Germania was increasingly lonely too. When her birthday rolled around, her employers took her out to eat, to the Burger King near the house.
Vinieron todos y me invitaron a comer una hamburguesa. Y ya, eso fue todo.
She says they ate their burgers and went home. They didn't even sing happy birthday. But Germania kept her spirits up by calling home. Every Sunday, she would buy a phone card and call her family from a payphone outside of a McDonald's.
O sea, los domingos cuando salía, aquí cerquita está el McDonald's, allá afuera había los telefonitos de las monedas y llamamos con tarjeta. Entonces así podía hablar con mis papás. Pero yo a ellos nunca les dije estoy mal, me pasa esto, porque primero van a sufrir y segundo tampoco podían hacer mayor cosa. Yo a ellos los mantuve bien alejados de cualquier cosa.
She never told her family about the long work days or the hours she spent locked inside the home alone. She didn't want to burden her family. And there was also a lot of guilt.
Aún era bastante inocente en ciertas cosas. Entonces, es un poco difícil, pero yo creo que también la ignorancia es atrevida porque yo no investigué nada. Y yo creo que la mayoría de las chicas venimos a ciegas también.
Germania says she faulted herself for not asking more questions. She felt foolish, and the weight of her employer's words were getting to her. She says they made her feel like she was worthless.
O sea, me trataba como si fuera una tonta. Porque eso es lo que ellos hacen. La mayoría de los diplomáticos, porque vuelvo y repito, no son todos, pero sí casi la mayoría. Pides alguna cosa que tienes derecho, pero te hacen sentir como que tú no vales nada.
Nelson, the husband, and his young son called Germania or sister monkey. It's a racist slur that she had heard in Ecuador, but she had never been called that to her face. But there was one saving grace in her life, her friendship with Alexandria. She was a domestic worker as well, who worked for another Ecuadorian diplomat. Alexandria and Germania went to English classes together, and eventually they also started meeting up on Sundays, their one day off. They would go to McDonald's, the only place they could afford, and sit and talk for hours. Germania learned a lot about her rights from Alexandria, because Alexandria had been talking to advocates from Casa de Maryland, a community organization that fights for the rights of Latinos and immigrants in the area. The organization had also quietly stepped in to help diplomatic domestic workers, helping them escape the homes of their employers and offering legal assistance. Through Casa de Maryland, the women learned that they were being underpaid, that they had a right to privacy, to health care, to keeping their own legal documents. Alexandria wanted to escape, but Germania was too afraid. Escaping meant losing her visa, and Casa de Maryland didn't have a shelter where she could stay.
Tampoco mi intención era salirme, pero o sea, ya habían habido muchos problemas y se fue poniendo como un poco más difícil.
Then, one day while cleaning, Germania spotted her passport inside of a drawer. It was early 2004, and Germania had been in the U.S. for nearly 2 years at that point. She wanted so badly to take her passport back, but she felt like she was stealing, even though the passport was hers. So she left it there. But every few days, she would go back and just look at it.
Eso es algo que hasta ahorita no me puedo sacar de la cabeza. O sea, a mí me dicen, no seas bajo, no te lo robaste. Me lo robé, ay Dios. No sé, yo siento que hice algo que no estaba bien.
One day, Germania decided she was done. Her friend Alexandre was planning to escape her employers. Germania was scared that they would find out and she would face repercussions. So, Germania made a phone call to Casa de Maryland. She told them she was ready to go too. It was 9 p.m. and Jayesh Rathod, an immigration lawyer from Casa de Maryland, drove up a quiet DC street in a white van. He parked under a tree where he could watch the entrance of the townhome where Germania was living. His co-worker, Sylvia, sat in the passenger seat. Alexandria, Germania's friend, sat in the back seat with all of her belongings. She had just escaped the home of her employer. It was Germania's turn next.
And so we got out of the van and walked up to the door and we knocked.
Germania had been waiting for Veronica to get home.
And Germania answered the door. And I remember her whispering something to us about the employers or traffickers weren't yet home. I think she was helping the kids with their homework. And so we knew that we needed to wait until they got home so that we could communicate directly with them so they knew what was happening.
Before Jayesh arrived, Germania had thrown all of her belongings in trash bags and put them out on the curb, hoping that the neighbors would think she was just taking out the garbage. Eventually, Veronica and her husband got home. Jayesh and his partner waited for a few minutes. Then they knocked on the door.
We explained to them that we were here to help Germania get out of the house because of the conditions that she had been living in. And I remember distinctly that there was just confusion and frustration on the part of Veronica. Frankly, I think she was shocked, right? Because she didn't expect that this would happen, that somebody would have been paying attention to what was happening in the home and that her domestic worker would be leaving.
But Jayesh says they held her ground. As they talked, Germania left the house and got into the van. She was terrified.
Era una mezcla como de nervio y felicidad, pero al mismo tiempo mucho miedo porque no sabíamos. No teníamos trabajo, no teníamos dinero, no hablábamos el idioma y tampoco no sabíamos dónde nos íbamos a quedar.
Germania says this decision was just as risky as coming to the U.S., and that hadn't worked out for her. She kept thinking, at least here, I have a roof over my head. What if I end up in the streets?
Pero gracias a Dios, sí hubo gente que me tendió la mano.
Because Casa de Maryland didn't have a shelter to take the women to, others had volunteered to help. That night, Veronica and Alexandria went to the home of a woman that they had met a few times and started the fearful process of figuring out what's next. Germania had a lot of different needs, most urgently, a place to sleep and money to eat. But she also desperately needed legal assistance. Leaving her employer meant she no longer had legal status in the U.S. She was suddenly undocumented. A little while later, Jayesh, the lawyer who helped Germania escape, began running a law clinic at American University in D.C. He and the students he worked with decided to take on her case pro bono. They helped Germania file for a T visa, which victims of human trafficking who have cooperated with law enforcement can apply for. If she got approved, that would allow Germania to remain in the U.S. legally. While Germania's immigration petition was pending, the clinic also filed a civil lawsuit for stolen wages against Veronica and her husband. Veronica didn't show up to court, but in June 2007, a judge ordered Veronica and her husband Nelson to pay Germania about $45,000 in unpaid wages. This was great news. The problem was, there really wasn't any way to compel them to pay.
Right, there really isn't true accountability yet, right? Because when it comes to things like enforcing judgments or imposing more severe penalties, right, which the law permits and in fact requires, that isn't happening.
Facing no repercussions, Veronica and her family left the U.S. for Ecuador when her post ended. There, she waited for her next diplomatic assignment. Hoping that the Ecuadorian government would step in, Germania and her lawyer reached out with a copy of the lawsuit. The following year, they asked the U.S. Department of State to step in. The U.S. Department of State said they supported her claim, but that was it. The Ecuadorian government replied saying that they were really sorry about what Germania went through and that they stood against labor and human trafficking. But They consider this a, quote, personal matter, and the government wouldn't intercede. Jayesh says the idea that this is a private matter is laughable because it was the government of Ecuador which petitioned for her visa, and it was a government official in a diplomatic mission who committed the abuse, an official which can only legally get in trouble with their own government due to diplomatic immunity. But Germania's lawyer kept trying. Their letters and calls to Veronica went unanswered, but Jayesh and the law students continued to keep tabs on her moves.
There she is again with her husband and another guest at the event, maybe some kind of art exhibit. Doesn't seem to be camera shy. She's doing her work as an ambassador, right? She's at public events. She's out and about. She's with high profile people.
Jayesh shows some of the photos that they've collected over the years. Currently, he says Veronica is working at the embassy in Madrid, Spain. Almost 15 years later, they're still trying to collect the debt.
We recently sent a letter to the State Department under the Biden administration, right? Reminding them that under federal law, when there was a case like Germania's involving an unsatisfied judgment, the law permits and in fact arguably requires the State Department to stop issuing visas to that country for purposes of bringing domestic workers for their diplomats. And so until that kind of accountability actually happens, right, like real consequences, you know, this practice is going to continue.
Jayesh says lawyers like him could spend their entire careers chasing diplomats all over the world. That's why the U.S. needs to intervene from the start. He says the U.S. has a right to request a waiver for diplomatic immunity, which would allow them to take a diplomat to court for breaking the law and for trafficking workers. They just have to want to use it.
That is the most powerful weapon that they have, right? And of course, politically very sensitive because of the reciprocal effect it could potentially have on U.S. diplomats overseas, right? But again, if we're going to take the human rights, labor rights, right, of these domestic workers seriously, then we have to push harder and to demand more accountability, even if it's politically and diplomatically uncomfortable.
We reached out to Veronica for comment, but did not receive a response. Germania's struggles are not exclusive to her. In fact, many have faced even harsher abuses at the hands of their diplomatic employers. Claudia Marie Flores has been fighting to protect domestic workers for nearly two decades. She's the director of the Global Human Rights Clinic at the University of Chicago Law School.
These domestic workers could not hold the diplomats accountable in courts. They couldn't recover lost wages. They couldn't bring them to justice in any way. And so advocates like myself, after making several attempts to go before U.S. courts, and the State Department would always step in on behalf of the diplomat, we finally saw no other option. And so we went to this regional body to try to seek justice, to the Inter-American Commission. And that's why we filed the petition.
The Inter-American Commission for Human Rights is actually one of the two main bodies to the human rights portion of the Organization of American States, which the U.S. is a part of and is supposed to comply to. Claudia was a lawyer with the ACLU in 2007 when they filed a petition asking the court to hear their allegations against the U.S. They recounted the cases of dozens of women like Germania.
The argument that we were making in the original petition is that the U.S. was discriminating against women and people of color, essentially. So this is a very, very vulnerable group of workers that are making very little money in an industry that's already extremely unregulated. And in the United States, domestic labor is excluded from most of our major labor and employment protections.
Claudia says this caused a lot of bad press for the U.S. at the time, which led to some changes in the following years.
The State Department tried to put some protections in place, but none of them have put these domestic workers on equal footing with other workers who are working for employers as domestic workers.
Those protections include requiring that diplomats give domestic workers a contract, that they pay minimum wage. U.S. officials also now give pamphlets to domestic workers about their rights in the U.S. when they get their visa. And the Department of State even began doing some home visits. But Claudia says it's not nearly enough. This summer, 14 years after the petition was filed, the commission has finally agreed to take this matter under advisement. After a hearing, the commission will issue what is called an advisory opinion. Claudia hopes that the commission will rule that the U.S. has been failing to protect these workers and needs to change its laws, so that diplomats can be punished for violating the rights of their workers under U.S. law. But she thinks to make a meaningful change, these changes would need to happen through U.S. Congress. Claudia adds that a favorable ruling for diplomatic domestic workers could actually be huge for domestic workers of all types across the country. In 2012, 8 years after escaping Veronica's home, Germania became a legal resident of the U.S. And 5 years later, she became a U.S. citizen. Along the way, she had a daughter, Kiara, who's 11 years old now. While Germania is still hoping to recover the money that she's owed, she has moved on with her life. She's been working at an elementary school for the last 9 years as a custodian, and she was even able to make at least one of her dreams come true, to go back home to Ecuador to see her family. 6 years had passed without seeing them.
Yo solo me imaginaba en el momento que el piloto dijera esas luces que estaban allá. Es Quito. O sea, o estamos en el espacio aéreo de Ecuador, o qué sé yo. Si yo solo eso me imaginaba, porque me imaginaba que iba a llorar mucho de la emoción. Y cuando yo fui, iba con ella. Entonces, sí me emocioné cuando lo dijo. Me quedé así como que, wow, estoy en Quito. Ya estoy por ver a mi familia, pero no pude llorar.
Germania describes being on the plane with her daughter and seeing the lights of Quito shining below them as they were getting ready to land. She always thought that she would break down crying. She thought of the young woman who left Ecuador with so many dreams and the hardened woman who returned. But she says that when the moment came, the tears didn't come. Germania currently lives in Virginia with her daughter, Kiara. She has since traveled 2 more times to Ecuador to visit her family. Each time, she says, she sees how her country has changed, how time has affected her friends and loved ones. She no longer dreams of returning home to live in Quito, at least not yet.
¿Qué sería justicia para ti?
Que me paguen lo que me deben. Que no es algo que yo no estoy pidiendo limosna, es algo que yo lo he trabajado. Entonces, yo creo que a ellos lo que más les duele es el bolsillo. Y ya no se hace más por dinero, sino que pienso que se hace para que ellos también sientan donde más le duele, que no pueden seguir haciendo esto. A nadie.
Germania says that she won't feel like justice has been served until her former employers pay her the money that they owe. She says it's not really about the money for her. After all, she's gone through more than a decade without it. And even when things were the most difficult, she has always come out on top through her hard work. But Germania says money is what they care about most. And that's why she would like to see the U.S. government step in and assist her in collecting the debt.
¿Cómo cambiaría tu vida recibir ese dinero que se te debe?
Haría, por fin cumpliría mis sueños. Que es, cuando yo vine a este país, mi sueño era comprarme una casa y ponerme un negocio. Entonces yo creo que si se lograra, ese dinero iría destinado para eso.
Germania admits that $45,000 would change her life. After all, she worked hard for that money. It would allow her to finally make that suitcase full of dreams that she left Ecuador with come true, to buy a home for her family, and to open a little shop where she's finally her own boss.
Ese era mi sueño. Yo tengo un amigo que me molestaba. Siempre decía, el baúl de sueño, la casa. Porque para él era chistoso, pero para mí era algo importante y lo sigue siendo.
Veronica is currently stationed in Spain. She's still a diplomat for the Ecuadorian government. Germania's lawyers are still attempting to collect the debt.
You can learn more about the experiences of diplomatic domestic workers and the abuse they're exposed to in an upcoming investigative piece by Noy Thrupkow for The Washington Post magazine. This episode was produced by Julieta Martinelli with assistance by Janice Yamoka and reporting by Noy Thropkow. It was edited by Marta Martinez and mixed by Julia Caruso. The Latino USA team includes Andrea Lopez Cruzado, Mike Sargent, Victoria Estrada, Patricia Zulbarán, Ginny Montalvo, Alejandra Salazar, Reynaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our editorial director is Julio Ricardo Varela. Special thanks to The Washington Post magazine. Our senior supervising engineer is Stephanie LeBeau. Additional engineering by Leah Shaw Dameron, with help from Gabriela Baez and JJ Carubin. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Maria Skinka. Our intern is Oscar De Leon. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, I'll see you on social media. Hasta la próxima. Chao.
Latino USA is supported by the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative.
W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities, where children come first. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
Get away. Away from me, mosquito. Get away from my iPad. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, the inequities that have left millions of people without access to vaccines in Latin America and the role the U.S. can play to fix them. That's next time on Latino USA.
From PRX.